Welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza, working from home on this pre-recorded program via remote from Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, March 16, 2021. Internal displaced persons in Malakal reject a decision by the national government on the boundaries of the town's municipality.
The legal process should be followed. Why they are creating chaos in Malakal by this, what they are acting. So our demand is just the issue must remain as it is.
And 8 people are killed during a road accident on the Juba Munri Road.
Arabia is rude.
The driver abruptly saw the bridge and he tried to stop in vain. Turn left, right, but he lost control and vehicle ended up falling into the water where 5 people died.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Thousands of internal displaced persons at the UN Protection of Civilian site in Malakal are rejecting a decision by the national government to transfer Malakal County headquarters to Wawushilu County. South Sudan government announced last week that Malakal County will be annexed to Malakal Town Municipality in Upper Nile State. The IDPs held a peaceful demonstration against the decision in Malakal Town. For VOA News, Viola Elias reports from Juba.
Paulino Adok, one of the protesters at the UN camp in Malakal, says the decision to move Malakal County headquarters to Wawushilu County angered most of the Cholo people. Adok says the national government should have consulted the elders in the Cholo community, who are the inhabitants of Malakal, before making the change. Adok calls the government decision illegal.
The legal process should be followed. Why they are creating chaos in Malakal by this, what they are acting. So our demand is just the issue must remain as it is. Malakal County comprises of 5 Fayam, Northern Fayam, Central Fayam, and Southern Fayam, plus Nehenu Fayam and Ogor Fayam. And the capital should be in Malakal. So later on, if people agree on relocating the county headquarters, it should be done through the local authorities or local council.
A protesters who prefers to be identified only as Lazarus, due to the sensitivity of the matter, says he too rejects the government decision to relocate Malakal headquarters to Wawushilu. Lazarus says the national government is trying to create tension in Upper Nile State despite the relative calm there.
We are not satisfied with the transfer of the capital and others. And people of Upper Nile are not to be in stability. Despite the suffering, people of Upper Nile are going through in the capitals, in the camps. The decision makers want to add more conflict into the recent crisis.
Protester Santino Obach Okuch, who also resides at the UN Protection of Civilian site, says it makes no sense to relocate Malakal County to Wawushilu.
Our message to the government is that Malakal County is one of the counties of South Sudan among 79 counties under the 10 states before the creation of 32 states. But after returning to the 10 states from the 32 states, there is no reason to have a dispute over Malakal County. So there is no reason to detach Malakal County from Malakal Town and relocate it to Wawushilu. In light of this, we condemn this decision.
Okuch says the protesters handed their petition to United Nations representatives, National Democratic Movement leader Lamakol, who comes from Cholo Kingdom, describes the decision as unconstitutional. Akol, whose group is a member of the South Sudan Opposition Alliance that signed the peace deal, says the issue of Malakal County is clear, the same way the capital of Juba County and Juba Municipality are based in Juba Town. He is calling on the national government to reconsider its decision, which may force other political parties to pull out of the peace agreement.
So we should never provoke a situation that can provoke violence, or that can provoke any party to jump out of the peace agreement. The peace agreement is very clear. The South Sudan has been returned to 10 states, which means that they have also been returned to 79 states, and Malakal County is one of the 79 states.
South Sudan in Focus reached out to Upper Nile State Governor Budhoke Anyang for comment, who said he was in a meeting and would provide a comment later. Last week, President Salva Kiir appointed Upper Nile State ministers and county commissioners, but did not appoint a commissioner for Malkal County. For VOA News, I am Viola Elias in Juba.
Relatives and police in Western Equatoria State say 8 people were killed in an accident on the Juba Mundri Road on Monday. They said a lorry carrying mourners and the body of a community leader from Lui in Mundri East County overturned on the Tapare Bridge. For VOA News, Siba Martin Morangi reports from Yambio.
Michael Ayub, a relative of some of the victims, says about 19 mourners set off from Juba around 9 o'clock a.m. in a tipper lorry, which was also carrying the body of a community leader identified as Michael Frangi. Ayub says the accident occurred about 64 miles from Juba on the Juba Mundri Road on the Tapare Bridge over the river of the same name, which separates Western Equatorial State from Central Equatorial State.
Arabia is used.
The driver abruptly saw the bridge and he tried to stop in vain. Turn left, right, but he lost control and the vehicle ended up falling into the water, where 5 people died instantly, including 3 daughters of the deceased.
Abraham Tong, the traffic police director in Greater Mundri, confirms the driver of the tipper lorry lost control when it overturned on the Tapare Bridge.
There were 3 vehicles escorting the dead body to Lui. The first and the second vehicles passed. The third vehicle was a tipper lorry. So, due to overspeeding, it fell into the water.
Tong identifies the driver as called Emmanuel Dobo Hassan, who survived the accident without injuries. And the driver is being detained at Rokon Police Station in Juba County of Central Equatorial State. Ayub and Tong say some of the mourners were injured in the accident. Ayub says 4 children of the late Henry Frank are among the injured who were transported to Lui Hospital in Mundri East County. Lui Hospital Medical Director Dr. Robert Moreno says all of the injured are in a stable condition. Dr. Moreno says he is making arrangements to refer some of the injured to Juba Teaching Hospital, where there are better facilities for better treatment. Margaret Fozier, the newly appointed commissioner of Mundri East County, offered her condolences to the bereaved families.
So it is a very sad situation, and it is a very painful, a very tragic moment in Mundri East and Western Equatoria in particular. And there is no specific arrangement, because as a county commissioner, I am not also in Mundri East, I am in Yambio, so there is no specific arrangement, maybe by the government or another institution, that is taking care of this, but it is the family.
93-year-old community leader Henry Farangi died in Juba on Saturday after what relatives say was a short illness. For VOA News, I'm Seba Martin Murangi in Western Equatoria, Yambio.
The United Nations has called on the South Sudan government to hold accountable political and military leaders responsible for the killings and abductions of hundreds of civilians in the Piwor administrative area and Jonglei State. A spokesperson of the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights says the government must investigate and hold to account individuals who committed the violations, chiefs, political and military leaders who fueled the intercommunal violence and supplied weapons to local militias. For VOA News, Nabil Biagio has more from Washington.
The 36-page report released on Monday was written by the United Nations Mission in South Sudan, or UNMISS, and the Office of the UN Commissioner for Human Rights. The report details armed violence and human rights violations committed by community-based militias in Jonglei State and the Pibor administrative area between January and August 2020. Marta Hurtado is the spokesperson for the Office of the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights.
These community-based militia were from the Dinka, the Nuer, and the Murle communities, that they were fighting each other, but as well establishing partnerships when there was a specific interest to fight the third community. And we are calling to held accountable not only those responsible physically for taking part in the violence and committing the violations, but those that helped them as well.
During the eight-month period, more than 700 people were killed, 320 others wounded, at least 686 women and children were abducted, and 39 women were raped, according to the report. Tens of thousands were also displaced, civilian property and humanitarian facilities were looted and destroyed, and at least 86,000 cows worth $35 million were stolen. Hurtado says the intercommunal violence was organized and fueled by multiple actors who created an environment that allows for human rights violations to occur.
We are talking an array of people, from traditional chiefs to spiritual leaders, from military and political elites, from the government and from the opposition, a big array of people helping the violence, even the diaspora, through financing and through promoting hate speech against.
The report acknowledges that there have been grassroots reconciliation efforts and peace talks between the affected communities. But it says the government so far has not taken any meaningful action to investigate and prosecute those responsible for human rights abuses in Jungle and the Pibor administrative area. Hurtado says the government must expedite the process of creating a unified army as provided for in the 2018 peace agreement in order to prevent violence perpetrated by local militias.
While this process have to continue of creating an only a one and a state control army, what should be done from now is to control the weapons, to avoid that the state-owned weapons arrive to these militias, and of course, as a second step, to avoid that other weapons arrive to these militias, to prevent further violence that could put in danger the fragile peace agreement in the country.
South Sudan in Focus repeatedly tried to contact South Sudan's government spokesperson, Michael Makwey, to comment on this report without success. The report calls on the government to finalize the appointment of local administrators and local assemblies throughout Jonglei State and the Pibor administrative area to investigate all allegations of human rights violations and abuses and to prosecute those responsible. It says immediate and strong steps should also be taken to facilitate the release and reunification of abducted women and children with their families. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Washington.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, we take a look at the secondary effects of COVID-19 pandemic around the world. We'll bring that story after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
who comes first in your life?
My sister comes first because she was the one who raised me. She taught me how to do everything, so she come first.
Definitely God, but I think when talking about people, I think my family and my friends, just people who I've, you know, surrounded myself with.
I think the woman that I love, every moment I think about her, every moment I wish I'm around her, because she makes me happy. She gives me a lot of peace. She has a way of helping me to just relax and calm down.
My mom comes first in my life because she has really done a whole lot for me, and if there's anything, I would really want to do something to honor her.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. United Nations data from around the world show that the secondary effects of the COVID-19 pandemic has been particularly devastating for women and children. Government responses to the pandemic have pushed millions of women and children into poverty, raised gains in education for girls, and increased vulnerability to domestic violence and hunger. Helga Fogstad is the executive director of the World Health Organization's Partnership for Maternal, Newborn and Child Health. She recently spoke with my colleague Kate Pound Dawson about these knock-on effects and what needs to be done about them.
So recent data from 105 countries that WHO has studied, 90% have experienced disruptions to health services because of COVID. So especially with low and income countries, reporting the greatest difficulties with immunization and family planning services being hit the hardest. So you really have inequities increasing, and the UN has estimated 71 million people are being pushed back into poverty, and I think it's 47 million are women and girls. And as I said, childhood vaccination, most disrupted service among the countries studied, with a significant drop in numbers of children fully vaccinated. For example, in Liberia, a 35% drop, Nigeria, 13% drop. So this is absolutely serious. And what we're seeing now is the early estimates of the indirect impact of COVID on child and maternal mortality indicate that more than 2 million additional children and mothers deaths above pre-pandemic levels are estimated to occur over the 12-month period from, I think, 2020 into 2021 because of disruption of essential health and nutritional services. So the latest available data from WHO and partners revealed that also violence against women remains devastatingly pervasive and starts alarmingly young. So some 736 million women, that translates to a third of all women, have been subjected to physically or sexual violence across their lifetimes. And this is, you know, increased and by the COVID-19 pandemic, because women are locked into their houses and children too, and girls.
What do you think, other than providing health coverage, how else should governments in Africa and elsewhere, how should they address these needs?
So I think, first of all, I think the it has to be made explicit, women, children, and girls, and their needs need to be really be highlighted. I think we need to be. It requires leadership, firm yet compassionate leadership, leading the change, walking the talk for every woman and every girl and every adolescent and child. So I think although the direct effects of COVID are devastating, the indirect ones of the pandemic are less immediately visible, but are more devastating and need attention. So the pandemic has also showed, you know, that the leadership guided by evidence and true care about people can achieve, and how devastating it is when populistic and decisive issues are brought up. So I think that the crisis needs to be really focused on making clear that we have solutions not only around making services accessible, but also the safety of women and also of children, and to make sure that areas in regards to their their food security and also their safety.
That's Helga Fogstad, Executive Director of the World Health Organization Partnership for Maternal, Newborn and Child Health. She was speaking with my colleague Kate Pound Dawson. Still on COVID, while the world continues to reel from the coronavirus pandemic, the mere existence of effective vaccine has created hope for an end to the plague that has already killed over 3 million people around the world. However, the rollout has been uneven and availability of the vaccine has skewed almost completely to a small number of wealthy developed nations. Reasons for this inequality include what has been termed as vaccine nationalism, whereby countries seek to vaccinate even its low-risk citizens before sharing their supplies with other countries. These and many related issues are addressed in a new wide-ranging report by the Council of Foreign Relations in Washington, D.C. To find out more, VOA's Adam Phillips spoke with Thomas J. Boyke, Senior Fellow for Global Health Economics and Development at the Council on Foreign Relations and Co-Director of its Independent Task Force on Preparing for the Next Pandemic.
We are 4 months into the global rollout, and 4 out of 5 of the doses that have been distributed so far have gone to just 9 nations.
What are those countries?
The United States, China, United Kingdom, India, Brazil, Turkey, Israel, Germany, Russia, and the United Arab Emirates. So by and large, countries with resources in advance purchased doses, so they have gotten the earliest doses.
I know the United States, under former President Trump, wanted to make sure that all the vaccine processing and ingredients and even some components like glass vials were made in America. But that didn't work out at all. The supply chains we rely on are international and interconnected.
But we're also interconnected with the spread of the virus. It's a pandemic. No one is safe until everyone's safe. It sounds like a cliche, but it's very much true.
Indeed, your report outlines several dimensions of interconnection.
So there is the humanitarian and moral issue that your access to life-saving medicines shouldn't be determined by the country of your birth or where you happen to reside. That's the moral issue. The health issue is that while this virus continues to spread, it's going to put unvaccinated people at risk everywhere. But also because of the emergence of these new variants, like we've seen emerging out of Brazil or South Africa or the United Kingdom and the U.S. Some of these variants are more deadly. They spread more easily and can be more resistant to vaccines. The third reason is economic. We're all interconnected. And if the economies of other nations suffer because they don't have an ability to bring the pandemic under control, all nations suffer.
Your report also highlighted the geopolitical aspect of this issue.
At the end of the day, if within a global crisis, there is a life-saving intervention in which it was in every nation's interest to share, and we don't, what are our prospects of global cooperation occurring on addressing future pandemic threats, climate change, nuclear nonproliferation, any collective action challenge that depends on nations working together to solve?
That's Thomas J. Boyke, Senior Fellow for Global Health, Economics and Development at the Council on Foreign Relations and Co-Director of its Independent Task Force on Preparing for the Next Pandemic. From Washington, we move to Sudan, where South Sudan's first vice president in charge of service cluster visited Khartoum to seek opportunities for cooperation with various institutions in Sudan and South Sudan. For VOA News, Michael Atit has more from Khartoum.
Vice President Abdulbaghi arrived Khartoum last weekend to follow up on implementing Sudan's peace deal signed in Juba and to seek more cooperation opportunities with Sudanese authorities. Speaking to reporters this week after meeting with the head of Sudan's Sovereign Council, Abdul Fattah al-Burhan, Abdulbaghi said he met with several parties to the peace deal who assured him of their commitment to fully implementing the agreement. He says South Sudan is pleased with the level of mutual understanding between members of the Sudan transitional government and the various parties to the last year's peace deal.
لقيت الأمور هادية.
I came this time around and I saw the situation is calm and my hope to the revolutionary parties and parties that signed the Juba peace deal that they should take the responsibility of Sudan fully. What we have seen after the recent formation of the government and if it continues that way, Sudan will regain its position and the Sudanese people will benefit from this government.
Abdulbaghi says he also used his visit to raise the concerns of some South Sudanese students studying at various Sudanese public universities who said that Sudanese education officials frequently ask them to pay their tuition fees in foreign currency, something he says most students cannot afford to do.
Tulabna Diamond.
Our students who are enrolled in universities far from Khartoum, such as in Port Sudan, or therefore are suffering. This is what is making our students not able to continue their studies due to hardship, and especially when there are no hostels in those areas. We discussed these issues with the president, and he promised to notify the Sudan's Minister of Higher Education, and the two ministers of the two countries should be meeting soon to address that matter once and for all.
Abdulbaghi says he also held several meetings with Sudanese officials who are in charge of the service cluster in Sudan and discussed opportunities of bilateral cooperation between the two countries.
We discussed issues such as exchange of health experiences between the two nations. There will be a number of agreements and memorandum of understanding that will be signed soon in this regard. Upon my return to Juba, we will form a service cluster ministerial delegation to come to Khartoum to meet their counterparts and explore the details.
Abdulbaghi says he and Sudanese officials also discuss the security situation along the two countries' common border and trade, noting that the two nations' economies are interlinked and can be boosted by strengthening cooperation.
We looked at the food security situation between the two countries, and what I have observed is that Sudan's agricultural production this season is commendable. We are going to see how we can all benefit from these products. We will open roads along the border points so that Sudan can also sell their goods in the South Sudanese markets in the coming period.
In October last year, Sudanese and South Sudanese security and defense officials signed a memorandum of understanding in Khartoum to strengthen security cooperation between the two countries. The agreement calls for securing Sudan and South Sudan border to speed up the movement of goods and travels. For VOA News, I am Michael Atid in Khartoum.
We love to hear what you think about this show. Our WhatsApp number is +12026308011. We now leave you with the song Tutu Party by Emerson. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for being part of our evening. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you're in public places to protect you and others against COVID-19. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there's no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Come start a party. We arrive on man arise. Look them sexy lady, look them tasty lady. Them fine, now so them sabi wine. Send you. If I watch gonna yai, hey. If only I go fry. I dey watch like a bottom step and die. I see short skirts, hey. And mini skirts. Oh, who's one for dance with when his party goes that? I want ballet, yeah. I want ballet.
What you want?
Makale, and the party back me alle.
Overload,
no to your business. Party na party, you come. Let me make a overload. If we at you gonna do, oh, oh, yeah, yeah. Deserves a body, every man deserves a lady. Can't suit to party, oh no. calm, jam, shake your body. Can't show me, say you savvy. If you really ready, oh no. Before you even start the party, check for G-string or bikini. Now that's man, they ready, oh no. Dance it to two, so jam, so.